It's Tuesday, June 15th. I'm Sarah Y. Kim, sitting in for Aaron Henkin. Governor Hogan declares Maryland's worst COVID-19 days behind us and ends the state of emergency. Meanwhile, Baltimore City's top officials demand that Hogan reverse his decision to end unemployment benefits. And a law professor offers clarity on what Maryland employers can legally do when it comes to getting their staff vaccinated. It's the Daily Dose from WYPR, our latest reporting on Maryland's COVID-19 response and the local news of the day, made possible by GBMC Healthcare. Maryland's largest county is finally easing their COVID-19 restrictions. Montgomery County has lifted their limits on capacity and are also allowing bars and restaurants to fully reopen. Face masks continue to be required for everyone in schools and healthcare centers. The county has vaccinated more than 60% of its residents to date. Baltimore's top elected officials are calling on Governor Larry Hogan to reverse his decision to end expanded unemployment benefits on July 3rd. WYPR's Rachel Bay has more.
In a letter to Hogan on Monday, Mayor Brandon Scott, Council President Nick Mosby, and Controller Bill Henry say the decision to cut off the federally funded benefits 2 months early will worsen existing racial and economic disparities, especially in Baltimore. Scott says his office is inundated daily with messages from residents who struggle to access their unemployment benefits even now, before the expanded benefits expire.
You cannot think that it's an appropriate time to end those benefits when you know that this pandemic has hit communities like Baltimore harder than other places.
If Hogan does not reverse the decision, Scott, Mosby, and Henry are calling on the General Assembly to step in. I'm Rachel Bay, reporting for 88.1 WYPR.
Marylanders can get vaccinated for COVID-19 at the home of the Baltimore Orioles. Vaccinations will be administered at Dempsey's Brew Pub and Restaurant beginning Friday through June 23rd. Anyone who gets vaccinated will receive two lower-level tickets to an Orioles game that can be used before July 11th. The O's play at home for Father's Day weekend. Baltimore City's Upton Druid Heights neighborhood has hit a record low Black infant mortality rate. Mayor Brandon Scott and Health Commissioner Dr. Letitia DeRosa celebrated the milestone today, crediting the work of the Be More for Healthy Babies program. When the program was first established more than 10 years ago, Upton Druid Heights had a higher infant mortality rate than the rest of the city, with 15 deaths per 1,000 live births. The neighborhood now has 3.8 deaths per 1,000 live births, a rate comparable to the city's overall white infant mortality rate. Baltimore County is offering some green to help nonprofit organizations celebrate the red, white, and blue on July 4th. The county announced today it will offer a $3,000 grant for county-based nonprofits to spend on Independence Day festivities. The money can be used for things like parades, festivals, and fireworks. Organizations must apply by June 25th for the limited funds. You can find out more at baltimorecountymd.gov/Independence Day Grant. Governor Larry Hogan effectively declared mission accomplished on the COVID-19 pandemic when he announced today the state of emergency he declared 15 months ago will end on July 1st. Rachel Bay has more.
Hogan highlighted several data points as evidence that, at least in Maryland, the pandemic is on its last legs. The positivity rate has gone from about 6% in January to just under 1% today.
In January, our case rate per 100,000 was 53.39, and today it's down to 1.57, the lowest since the very first days of the pandemic and the second lowest in America.
Hospitalizations are down too, from nearly 2,000 in January to just under 200 today.
We have finally reached the light at the end of that long tunnel.
When the state of emergency ends on July 1st, the most immediately visible change will be the elimination of all state government mask mandates, including at healthcare settings and schools. However, private organizations and businesses will still be allowed to require masks. Whether local officials can continue their own mask mandates as Baltimore City has likely varies by jurisdiction. Local school systems may also be able to set their own rules.
And I would hope that they would follow the science and follow the direction of the state.
A spokesman for Baltimore County Public Schools said masks will likely be required during summer school, which begins July 12th.
With respect to the parents, they can make whatever decision they want with their kids, and we would not discourage anybody. If they felt their kids were safer, they can ask their kids to wear a mask.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that anyone who has not been vaccinated continue to wear a mask. This would include any children under age 12, since no vaccines have been approved for that age group. Mask requirements are not the only rules changing with the end of the state of emergency. The change also affects things like marriage license procedures and early releases for inmates at state prisons. But for some changes, residents will be able to ease in with a grace period.
July 1st will also begin a 45-day grace period through August 15th, where certain regulations will continue to be relaxed to help people complete the transition out of the pandemic.
For example, if your driver's license expired during the pandemic, you don't have to rush out before July 1st to renew it. You have until August 15th.
We're also granting an additional extension of the moratorium on evictions related to COVID-19 through August 15th.
A slew of other pandemic-related rules also change on August 15th. For example, healthcare practitioners will no longer have to report vaccines within 24 hours of administering them. And legal documents will need to be witnessed in person until new state legislation authorizing remote witnesses takes effect in October. Even with the state of emergency ending, though, Hogan warned that COVID-19 is still a threat.
If you have been vaccinated, you are safe. But those who have not gotten vaccinated will continue to be at risk. At this point, there's simply no excuse for not getting vaccinated.
That's because, as Hogan said, the vaccines are both safe and effective. However, the governor said he has no plans to require state employees to get the vaccine. I'm Rachel Bay, reporting for 88.1 WYPR.
Hospitals and health systems in Maryland will be making COVID-19 vaccines mandatory for their employees, but other workplaces are still figuring out their own strategies for returning to the office. There's a question of whether employers can and should implement mandates, and whether employers can require proof of vaccination from their staff. Today I spoke with Professor Diane Hoffman to get some of her insight. Professor Hoffman is the director of the Law and Healthcare Program at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law. She's also the founder and director of the Maryland Healthcare Ethics Committee Network, an educational resource for ethics committees in Maryland. So some people are pointing to HIPAA federal privacy law to argue that it's illegal to ask someone for proof of COVID-19 vaccination. Could you clarify this and what that means for employers here?
So I think that's a common misperception that HIPAA actually applies to information that you give your healthcare provider, not your employer. And HIPAA generally only applies to what's called covered institutions. So those are healthcare institutions and insurers for the most part. I think people may be confused because what if you are an employee of a healthcare institution and you also get your healthcare in that institution? So they have your medical records. Well, even if that's the case, your medical records and your employee records are separate. Your employer could not ask your physician for a copy of your medical record without your consent. Your employer could, though, ask you for proof of vaccination, even though they couldn't ask your healthcare provider for that information. So, you know, your healthcare providers are often required to get the flu vaccine, or have been historically, even though that's less effective than the COVID vaccine. And usually to get hired even as a healthcare provider, in many states, you have to have certain shots or proof of having had certain vaccines, such as measles and rubella, and a TB test. So that's not unusual. That's, and there are state laws that require that.
In conclusion, it is legal for an employer to ask their staff if they've been vaccinated. What are some steps then that employers can take to ensure that that transition back to the office in person is safe?
OSHA has come out with suggested procedures that an employer can take to ease the transition back to work. And they actually encourage employers, if it's possible, to allow people to continue to telework at least some of the time. And still, if you're coming back to work, try to maybe alternate the number of workers who were in the office at the same time. Make sure that there are still opportunities for hand washing and to minimize or just hygiene practices to try to maintain social distancing practices. And also, I think, to educate your employees who may not be that familiar with infection control, special accommodations where necessary for maybe any employees who have some underlying health conditions where they might be at greater risk if they get the virus or if they have someone at home who's at greater risk. So those are some of the things that at least OSHA recommends that employers do during this transition time.
Recently, hospitals in Maryland, they decided to make the COVID-19 vaccine a condition of employment. Could you speak to the legality of issuing mandates in non-medical workplaces, specifically here in Maryland? And is there really a legal difference between what health systems can require, like hospitals, and what non-healthcare employers can mandate?
Well, the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, a federal agency, has basically said that employers may require the COVID vaccine so that there's no federal law that prohibits it. So basically, it's a matter of state law for the most part. So you have to look at each individual state. There's not necessarily a difference between employers or healthcare institutions and non-healthcare institutions. Of course, you just think about other kinds of business settings where employees are either in close contact with one another, working near each other, or facing customers, or in the restaurant business, waiting on tables, lots of kinds of businesses where you are in close contact with other people. So that distinction hasn't been made. But it's interesting that some states have passed laws, just a couple, but a number of bills have been introduced in many states to prohibit employers from mandating the vaccines or requiring proof of vaccination. That's happening in many states. The two states that I know of that where the bill has actually been passed and it's been signed into law by the governor are Montana and Arkansas, but nothing in Maryland.
So in Maryland, no restrictions yet as to mandating vaccines in the workplace.
Exactly.
Do you think, though, that mandates are an effective measure to get people vaccinated for COVID? And what workplaces should require them, in your view?
So you mentioned that I am part of something called the Maryland Healthcare Ethics Committee Network that basically deals with healthcare institutions. And some of them are beginning to mandate vaccines for their staff. And I guess the network, we think that it's better to encourage staff to comply, and this would also apply to other employers, that you don't want to have some kind of backlash where people are forced to do something that they don't want to do. And to the extent that there may already be any kind of mistrust between the employee and the employer, you certainly don't want to exacerbate that. So to the extent that you can get employee buy-in and encourage them to get the vaccine, I think that's the best first step. And if you want to put together some kind of committee of workers who can help you decide what is the best process to go through and in that encouragement, and there maybe you could even implement some kind of inducements or benefits for your employees who comply. I know some employers have done things like give people time off to go get their vaccine, or even give them a paid day off after they get the vaccine with the thinking that they might have some kind of side effects the next day. Those kinds of things can go a long way, or even providing transportation for people who may lack that. Also, I've heard of different kinds of things that hospitals are doing and other employees or employers. For example, rather than terminating someone's employment, if they are not getting the vaccine, that they just get tested every week or every other week, so the employer knows if they've been exposed to the virus. Or possibly another sanction I heard, or incentive, if you will, was that there's not, the employer's not mandating that the employees get the vaccine, but if they don't and then they do get COVID, that, and they have to be off from work for a number of days, that they may not get their, may not get paid during those days that they are not able to work. So I think there are a variety of things that employers can do, starting with more educational before you get to more incentives or sanctions for not complying.
And are there specific industries or workplaces that you feel should require mandates or seriously consider that?
Well, as I said, even in the healthcare context, which is probably where you could make the best argument for that, we think that it's still, even in that context, try to not mandate it, but do everything you can to encourage people and get their buy-in into getting the vaccine.
Professor Hoffman, is there anything that you want to add before I let you go?
Again, I hope that employers will really think about, if they are going to require their employees to get the vaccine, that they go through some kind of education with them, and give them some time to comply with the process that they are putting in place.
Professor Diane Hoffman is the director of the Law and Healthcare Program at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law. Professor Hoffman, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
We're always happy to hear from you, and we'll be here for you again tomorrow. The Daily Dose is brought to you by WYPR, made possible by GBMC Healthcare. Big thanks to the WYPR News team, Rachel Bay, John Lee, Joel McCord, and Emily Sullivan. Our digital content director is Jamila Krempel, and our general manager is LaFontaine Oliver. The executive editor of The Daily Dose is Danielle Irby. Stay healthy, stay sane, stay apart, but stand together. I'm Sarah Y. Kim. Thanks for listening.